Welcome to Puppet Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. He was pugnacious and ornery with a taste for whiskey, confrontation, and controversy. But Kansas City's Thomas Hart Benton was something else, too, a passionate painter who became the first artist featured on the cover of Time magazine and whose works are on grand display at the Truman Library and the Missouri State House. How important was he? That debate still rages today when we discuss the life of the great artist and a new biography, Thomas Hart Benton, A Life. The author is Justin Wolfe. He's an assistant professor of art history at the University of Maine. Professor, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much for having me this morning. I'm very happy to be here.
Justin Wolfe joins us from the studios of Maine Public Radio. Justin, the debate does rage on about Thomas Hart Benton. He was hailed at one point as the greatest artist in America. Others would later ridicule him as a populist throwback. So in your view, how important of an artist was he?
Benton was a tremendously important artist. We know, for instance, that despite his realism, his representational painting, which, as you say, was really considered a reactionary and a throwback during the rise of abstract expressionism, that he nevertheless was an important teacher for many of those abstract expressionists, most famously, of course, Jackson Pollock.
Right.
And Pollock learned quite a bit from Benton. And so in that sense, his legacy is really tremendously important.
In terms of his own abilities as an artist, where do you put him?
Benton is, in my mind, one of the great populist artists that America has ever seen. Hmm. And by populist, I mean that he was not a delicate painter. He didn't make paintings, and I say so in my book, that even I would consider conventionally beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But he did make paintings that captured the public imagination, that told vigorous, dynamic stories in an entertaining and popular way. And that's a wonderfully important legacy, I think. I mean, Benton made art for the people and better than anybody of his generation.
You know,
I
was going to say, I just loved his own description of his work. He talks about the bumps and hollows of the work that he did. What a great set of words.
What a wonderful set of words. I really enjoy that phrase as well and get quite a bit of mileage out of it in my book. You know, it comes from, at least the conventional belief is that he was borrowing those terms from the language of topographical description, actually, in the Ozark region. The bumps would be the mountains, the hollows, the hollers, or the valleys. And it was his way of describing, using a sort of a regional language, what he sees as the dynamic rhythms in Baroque painting, for instance, the great old master Peter Paul Rubens. And he tried to update that and modernize it for the 1920s and 30s.
You know, in the 1930s, his work was criticized as a giant cliche, as way too similar to fascist art. What did he say to that?
Oh, he was terribly hurt by that charge. It came from a number of different critics, some artists and some art historians, who believed that he was telling too rosy a picture of American life during this the crisis of the Depression. He shows you know, productive Americans farming, singing, dancing, drinking, lassoing horses. And the more radical artists of that moment believed that that's precisely what America did not need at the beginning years of the Depression, which was an image of America as healthy and productive. It needed a radical reformation of its economic system. And so Benton's images did not fit that bill. That does not make him a fascist.
But on one hand, he's hailed as the greatest artist in America. Others criticize him. I guess his reputation really gyrated all over the map, right?
He's even today, and this is one of the things that I was surprised to learn. I knew that he was loved or hated during his own time. This remains true today. As I'm sure you know, you mentioned Thomas Hart Benton's name in Kansas City, and you either get an eye roll or a pithy anecdote about a meeting with Thomas Hart Benton over a bottle of scotch or gin.
Right.
And so they're very strong opinions about Benton and always have been. So his reputation gyrated, as you say, constantly. One day he was a heroic folk artist, and the next day a a cranky reactionary.
But as you point out in here, as much as he was criticized, he dished it out himself pretty well. You write that he would belligerently bait any artist walking a different stylistic or ideological path, and that he scandalized New Yorkers with his comments. So I guess what? Don't feel too sorry for Thomas Hart Benton?
Don't feel too sorry for Thomas Hart Benton. It's a nice way of putting it. He could certainly be hurt, as anybody can when they put something out, to the public. And critics can say harsh, nasty things, and they certainly had plenty to say about his art. But he certainly invited that as well. He knew how to work the press, how to give a radio interview and a newspaper interview, how to punch buttons. And so, for sure, he invited quite a bit of that controversy himself by attacking really anybody that he deemed, whether this is true or not, anybody he deemed an elitist Eastern intellectual. And so to dish it out, you have to be prepared to take it. And he could take it at times. But at other times, he would be crushed by the criticism.
You know, Professor, you have just a great quote from him in here. He once said that art would appear to almost guarantee a life of peace and quiet, but he also confessed that it never did for me. He just lived life in a tempest, didn't he?
He lived life in a tempest, and he said that that was one of his birthrights, growing up in a family of boisterous politicians. Of course, his great uncle, the senator Thomas Hart Benton, major proponent of Manifest Destiny in the 19th century. His father, a U.S. Congressman from Missouri, and his father didn't want him to become an artist because he felt it was too refined. It was not a public a profession that would get him engaged with the major political issues of the time. But his father was wrong. In fact, it was through his career in art that Benton became so engaged with all the issues of his day.
Oh, his father, as you point out, served in Congress. His uncle was the sixth-term U.S. senator from Missouri. Given that, why wasn't Thomas Hart Benton, the artist, drawn to politics?
He says in one of his several memoirs, An Artist in America, which was first published in 1937, a really wonderful book, that it was his exposure to the politicking around the dinner table that he had witnessed as a child, and the politicking that he saw on the campaign trail with his father throughout Missouri, that parts of it were entertaining and that it was wonderful to travel with his father as a young boy. But he saw how viciously his father was attacked and how capricious many people's political positions are. And he deemed it distasteful. He said that he had no hunger for it whatsoever. Of course, we have to assume that a part of that was simply to reject his father's wishes for him.
We're visiting with author Justin Wolfe. He's an assistant professor of art history at the University of Maine. His new book is Thomas Hart Benton, A Life. You know, in Washington, I guess his exposure there paid off in a different way because Thomas Hart Benton saw giant murals for the first time, which, of course, would later become his trademark. To what extent, Justin, was he influenced by what he saw out east there?
Oh, it was really had a monumental influence on him, and he speaks very articulately about it as well in his memoir. He, as a young boy, had always been interested in drawing, and he would draw cowboys and Indians and freight trains and typical things we would expect an adolescent boy to draw pictures of. Once he gets to Washington and starts wandering around through the Library of Congress in the U.S. Capitol building, he's very struck by the murals, the public murals that were on view there. And what really moved him was their scale, also the sense of the sort of communal work that it takes to execute a mural, not just an artist, but of course all the craftspeople and apprentices setting up the ladders and building the scaffolding. But what moved him most was the sense that these murals spoke to American people and that it respected the issues that they cared about. These weren't just sort of cloistered or refined murals speaking about private meanings. And it was really that public aspect of the murals that stuck with him. Hmm. And that formed the bedrock of his aesthetic philosophy until his death.
As a boy, you describe him as lonely and hot-tempered. How so?
Benton had a classic short man complex, if you may allow me to use the cliche. He was very short, and it was something that was drawn to his attention by, in particular, one of his aunts who would always say to his mother and father, "Well, the rest of your children sure look like they're one of the Benton stock, but who is this strange short boy?" And he grew very defensive about that. And he learned how to wrestle and how to box to compensate for his short stature, and grew very pugnacious. He felt that he was being criticized even when he wasn't, whether it was by his father or by his father's friends. And so he learned from a very early age to strike a defensive posture, and it didn't always serve him well.
Well, his father, who was called the Colonel, was very distant from Thomas Hart Benton. What was the issue there?
The issue, as Benton tells it anyway, which is really the only sort of documentation we have about that relationship, was it revolved around the art in particular. Benton's father, the Colonel, the U.S. congressman, felt that artists were out of touch, that they were refined, and this did not groove with his own populist rhetoric and politics. He worried that his son was going to retreat into a world of aesthetics and of a very sort of specialized language of art and art theory. And he constantly derided his son for this interest. And Benton just couldn't understand how his father didn't see that this was something that he loved, and that it was also something that had public meaning. I mean, art, as Benton saw it, was always something that spoke to social life. And so they didn't groove on that opinion, and they never healed that rift.
So, Justin, when Thomas Hart Benton did decide to study art, where did he go to do it?
Well, he had some informal training as a child at the schools that he attended. But really, he knew that to become as important an artist as he wanted to become, that he did need a more formal academic training. And so he begged his mother and father to send him to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which was, of course, near enough by to not seem that they were sending him to the ends of the world. Mm-hmm. And they agreed after much lobbying on Benton's part of his parents. And so his first artistic training is at in Chicago.
But then he winds up in Europe, Justin, where he began to have some real doubts about himself. He once said, "I was merely a roughneck with a talent for fighting, perhaps, but not for painting," which he said during his experience in Europe. How hard did that time hit him?
It was a very difficult period for him, but he stuck with it for 4 years in Paris. It's important to remember that though we remember today Benton as a painter, both easel paintings and, of course, the great big public murals, but he actually didn't pick up painting until he moved to Paris in 1908. Before that, he had mainly worked as a draftsman, cartooning, making caricatures, and working with pen and ink. So he came late to painting in his artistic training. And once he got to Paris and realized how adept most of the people there were with oil on canvas, he really grew very skeptical about his own talents and believed for some years that he had made a huge mistake.
And so by age 30, he really didn't know where he was headed. So what did he do at that point?
Well, he comes back from Paris after 4 years, experimenting with virtually every style that was on view in Paris, from Impressionism to Pointillism to Cubism. And he finally runs out of money, and his parents say that they will no longer support his European sojourn. And he returns briefly to Neosho, Missouri, his hometown, for several months, unsure of what he will do. He realizes very quickly that that he would be too cloistered and cut off from what interested him. And so, like any artist, he moves to New York in 1913.
And what happens there?
Well, in New York, he is drunk on the experimentation, the abstraction of the art that had been shown at the famous Armory Show in 1913. And really was intent on becoming a modernist abstract painter, working in all sorts of different and rapidly changing aesthetics, working with color theory and making paintings that are known as synchromist paintings, which, if you can believe it, actually tried to pictorialize musical rhythms and harmonies. And so he worked and experimented in a host of abstract styles for really a period of about 10 or 11 years after he moved to New York.
Was he good at it?
Not terribly, and he would admit as much. His painting was, always was, very heavy. And what I mean by that is that there are these bumps and hollows, these extremely dynamic contrasts between what we perceive as sort of convex or concave spaces. So it has a sort of dimensional dynamism to it. And he applied paint in with lots of saturation. And so he didn't have a delicate hand. He didn't have really a touch or a feel for abstraction. And he knows this and realizes very quickly that his style is much more suited to a representational or a realist painting.
We're talking this morning about the life and times of Thomas Hart Benton, the great Kansas City painter. If you'd like to join our conversation, the question on the table, how great an artist was Thomas Hart Benton in your view? Critics today still disagree over exactly where he stands in the whole pantheon of great art. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Our email address is uptodate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. How great an artist ultimately was Thomas Hart Benton? Well, he did break through at some point here by making, this was interesting to me, dioramas and painting from three-dimensional models. Why did he go in that direction, and what impact did that begin to have on the rest of his career?
It was a very critical moment in Benton's development as an artist. He had realized that some of the old masters had made their paintings using small sculptures that they would create and literally would arrange on a flat surface to act out the action that they were trying to represent on the canvas. It gave these older artists access to an actual dimensional model from which they could make their paintings. And Benton claimed that one of the reasons he couldn't also be a good abstractionist was that he couldn't paint from the imagination. He needed to see something in order to paint it. And he hadn't yet realized that he could actually go and see actual people. And so what he did is he would create these small statues or sculptures of the human figure and arrange them in dioramas. And it gave him sort of access to the real presence of these forms. And it made it easier for him to figure out how to represent them on a flat surface. And so it was really the moment that we see the emergence of this trademark bump and hollow, this dynamic, rhythmic quality in his paintings, is because he's painting from these small clay sculptures that he himself would make.
That's interesting. So how did he get started then on those famous murals, even the ones that even today decorate the Missouri State House and the Truman Museum?
It actually was a much more difficult for Benton to become a muralist than we might expect, considering his reputation today and how famous these murals remain. He started painting American folk. In the mid 1920s, takes a trip back to Missouri, in fact, to attend to his father, who was dying a slow death of cancer. And after his father dies, he remains in Missouri and travels throughout the hill country and really becomes attuned to the life of the folk living in that region and comes back to New York with a really just, hundreds of drawings and sketches. And he starts making then very realist paintings. It's the beginning of what we think of as his regionalist style based on these drawings. And that gets him some attention in New York. He gets his first exhibitions at the galleries, and some of the critics begin reviewing those exhibitions and really admire the vitality and the sort of presence of these the stereotypical American folk. And that then leads to some of the mural commissions, although they were hard-earned for sure.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here. And Justin, you mentioned Thomas Hart Benton and the controversy that surrounds him, and the phone lines still light up so many years after his death. Let's go to Kevin here from Kansas City, Missouri. Kevin, you're on Up to Date. Good morning. You there, Kevin? Let's go to Richard from Green Valley. Richard, you're on the program. Good morning.
Good morning. I find your program fascinating because I am a fan of Thomas Hart Benton. I wanted to share my personal experience.
Yeah.
I'm 61 now, and it goes back to when I was about 12 or 13. I was making my first trip around the world with my parents at the time. I'm an Asian American. And I had been in a formal art training for a couple of years. I discovered very quickly, while I enjoyed it and I was decent at it, I wasn't good enough. But I learned to appreciate, you know, art in all of its different forms, one of which was Thomas Hart Benton. And I think I was probably one of the first Asians to really appreciate and recognize it. And I think I saw his first piece, or one of his pieces, for the first time myself in London. At the time, I didn't recognize the name, didn't know who he was. This was in 1963. And it wasn't until I moved to Kansas City in 82 and went to the Nelson and saw his paintings there that it brought back the first memory of it. And what really struck me at such a young age was the stirring qualities, the boldness of not just the size, but the caricatures that he painted. Were much bigger than life to me at the time. And because he painted American life the way he saw it and interpreted it, it really stuck in my mind. And so I find your program very interesting because I didn't know very much about Thomas Hart Benton. I've done some reading. But one of the questions I wanted to pose to Justin is that having seen a lot of the great masters in their exhibits around the world, I've always wondered what it is about some of these geniuses and some of the quirkiness, some of the insanity, I guess, that runs in all of these people, from Van Gogh to Gauguin and, you know, all of these artists. What is it that drives them?
A great question. Richard, thank you.
Yeah, that is a wonderful question, Richard. And, of course, at the end of the day, it is a bit of a mystery. But I think, you know, speaking in terms of Benton, one of the things that I can say is that he had an ambition that did border on the maniacal. You know, it takes a tremendous amount of sacrifice to make a living as an artist. You have to suffer through years and years of self-doubt, of course. And then you have to find an audience. And more often than not, as an artist, you're going to face rejection. And I think that one of the things that's required then to become, as Richard says, a genius or maybe just a successful artist is a self-confidence, an ability to withstand those withering criticisms and to believe in yourself. And I think that's a quality that's often accompanied by other qualities that we might deem disturbed or perhaps, at very least, egotistical.
Hmm. Richard, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to John from Overland Park. John, you're on Up to Date. Our guest today, Justin Wolfe. He's a professor at the University of Maine. His new book, Thomas Hart Benton, A Life. John, good morning.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, the question is twofold. One, when Hilton Kramer, the late esteemed, rather controversial art critic, was in Kansas City for a Benton seminar, he really took a vicious glee in attacking Benton. So one, I'd like to ask you about your thoughts on that. And two, Henry Adams, late American art curator at the Nelson, also has written a biography, of course, of Adams, and I'd like to get your opinion on that. And I'll listen off the air.
John, you're saying that Henry Adams has written a biography of Thomas Hart Benton, right?
Correct.
Yeah, gotcha. Thanks, John.
In fact, he's written several books on Ben.
Gotcha. Justin?
Yes. Yeah, thank you, John, for those questions. Let me speak to the second one first. You know, Henry Adams' work on Benton is really remarkable. He's written several really wonderful books on Benton, and he organized the spectacular centennial exhibition in 1989 at the Nelson that was the first major retrospective of Benton's career. And certainly Henry has been very generous with me in sharing his insights and some of his research materials on Benton and Pollock as well. And I owe a huge debt to him and say as much in my book. So I'm a great admirer of Henry Adams and his work on Benton. The first question, Hilton Kramer, Yes, if anybody wants to actually see Kramer himself in action excoriating Benton, take a look at Ken Burns' 1989 documentary on Thomas Hart Benton. It was also something that was put together with the help of Henry Adams, and it was part of that massive centennial celebration, 1989. And in that wonderful documentary, Kramer is interviewed quite a bit, and he has a wonderful moment there where he does explain that he hates Benton's paintings. He thinks that they're ugly, and he calls them kitsch and trash. And Kramer is certainly, or was, of course, he passed away just recently. But he was an old school critic. I mean, he had fairly, I think, conventional notions about what constituted beauty in art, and that's something that he looked for. And so Benton wasn't going to be his guy. That's obvious. But he does find some redeeming qualities in Benton. I think it was really a special moment in that film, where he says that Benton missed his vocation. He shouldn't have been a painter. He should have been a writer. And then Kramer goes on to praise Benton's writing. And in fact, this is one of the things that I learned in doing my research, is that Benton was a first-rate writer of memoir, of travelogue, and also of philosophy and of aesthetic theory. And so Kramer did find quite a bit to admire in Benton. It just wasn't his paintings.
Just to rectify the record for today, then, a painting by Thomas Hart Benton on the open market today, one of his better ones, what would that go for?
Well, that's a tricky question. It's really hard to predict. It would depend on the popularity of the painting, the kind of documentation that accompanied it. But certainly in the millions of dollars a Benton painting would sell for today on the open market. And it's not very common that you find one on the open market. Most of the paintings that aren't in either a private collection or in a museum collection are held in trust in Kansas City, in fact. And that trust lets these paintings out on the market infrequently. And so it's hard to gauge because they aren't bought and sold very frequently.
So much for Hilton Kramer, right?
So much for Hilton Kramer. You know, Kramer had a way, of course, of articulating his opinion that could ruffle feathers. I mean, he certainly was the picture of the stuffy art critic. But he didn't articulate anything that many people don't also believe, which is that they don't find Benton's paintings appealing. I mean, they are strong, they're bold, they're eye-catching. And for some people, that's not what they're looking for in painting. They're looking for something a bit more esoteric and a bit more perhaps gentle. And that's a matter of taste.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the life and times of Thomas Hart Benton. We'll get phone calls from Patty and Carol, and we'll talk about how it came to pass that Thomas Hart Benton became the first artist to grace the cover of Time magazine. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion about the power of introverts in a world that can't stop talking, you'll find that in our conversation with a barbershop quartet at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, wondering what piece of literature to pick up next? Don't worry, the book doctors are back to prescribe some very good reads for you. This hour, we're talking about Thomas Hart Benton, the great Kansas City artist, in a new book that describes his life in great detail, Thomas Hart Benton, A Life, the author Justin Wolfe. He's an assistant professor of art history at the University of Maine. And I should point out that he'll be speaking next Thursday, actually April 12th, Thursday at 6:30. That's next Thursday at the Central Library downtown. You can just show up or RSVP by going to kclibrary.org. That's 6:30 next Thursday, April 12th, to hear Justin Wolfe talk about the life of Thomas Hart Benton. You know, he was stabbed once by a girlfriend. Justin, what happened there?
Well, you know, he only mentions that in passing in his memoir, and we don't get the background story. She was upset. We know that much. and he keeps the rest to himself. In fact, for as outspoken as Benton was, he was very reticent when it came to speaking about the women in his life or any personal relationships. Mm-hmm. He was very protective, and so that's all we know, is that he was attacked and stabbed by an angry girlfriend.
How great an artist was he? We want your opinions. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Carol from Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Hi, good morning. I'm enjoying listening to the program.
Good morning. Yeah.
When I was in high school, I believe it was high school, we went on a field trip to Jefferson City, Missouri, to the state capitol. And there are paintings on the wall there. And it's been a long time, but I remember whoever the person was that gave the tour had us walk back and forth and look at the piece on the wall and show us or tell us how it moved, almost the perspective changed as we walked by. And I'd like just some sort of comment on the history of that painting and the perspective of it visually, and I'll just listen off the air.
Yeah, Carol, thank you. This is the famous painting in the House Lounge in the Missouri State House up on the third floor there. Go ahead, Justin.
Yes, this was really, in many ways, the most monumental commission of Benton's career. He had been living in New York from, as I mentioned, 1913 until 1935. And one of the things that brings him back to Missouri, to Kansas City, is the commission for the Jefferson City murals. The mural itself is titled A Social History of the State of Missouri, and it shows the history of the state from its settlement up until the present day, or at least Benton's present day. And it's a sprawling, massive a series of panels, and he had to deal with some tremendously difficult technical challenges, not just the scale, but also he worked year-round, and in the winter months, the lounge was unheated and freezing, and in the summer months, it was unair-conditioned and boiling hot, and people were standing below him as he was on the scaffolding trying to execute this elaborate narrative, and he wrestled with all sorts of problems of perspective. What's amazing, and this is just one of the things about Benton that does continue to amaze me, is that he could finish that whole series, as big as it is, with all the technical challenges, in a matter of 9 months. But that was the easy part, in fact. It was the controversy that surrounded the mural once it was unveiled that was harder for him to stomach.
Why was it so controversial?
Well, for several reasons. Benton insisted, and we get as much from the title of the mural, A Social History of the State of Missouri. Benton was in many ways a historian, and he told the unvarnished truth, at least his version of it. He would put alongside, for instance, some of the more charming aspects of Missouri history, the legend of Frankie and Johnny, or the harsh racial history in the state. But in particular, what he found upset the public so much and many of the politicians in the state was his inclusion of boss Tom Pendergast in the mural as the personification of Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Steve from Blue Springs, good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'm enjoying the topic of your show today. Mr. Wolf, you're very informative. I have a question for you, since you have talked about some of the other art that Mr. Benton has done around Missouri, and I was surprised to learn that he had lived in Neosho at one time. I myself was a boy in Neosho back in the mid-50s, and there was a bank on the corner of the square where my father did his business, and I would go in there with him. And I have the recollection that on the wall of that bank was a large mural. And I remember being fascinated by it and would stare at it for as long as I could while my dad was doing his business. Now, my question is that do you have any record of whether Mr. Benton might have done that mural? I have a vague recollection of various figures doing different tasks in the picture, or canoeing or putting up hay or that sort of thing. My question is, do you know if, in fact, it was a Benton, and any other information you might have, I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, thank you for the question. That is not a Thomas Hart Benton mural. He did not paint a mural for Neosho. He did, however, very late in his life, in the 70s, paint a mural for the city of Joplin, and it's still in the municipal building, Joplin City Hall, titled, the mural's title is The City of Joplin. Well, he did spend, yeah, please.
Well, he did return to Neosho with none other than former President Harry Truman at one point, right?
Yes, he did. He had a homecoming, a Thomas Hart Benton Day.
And he was cranky.
Very, very cranky. He was accompanied by a marching band and some beautiful bells from the local high school, none other than Harry and Bess Truman and his wife, and troops of Native Americans dancing in his honor. It was a tremendous event. And he was grumpy through the whole thing, crotchety, answering questions. Somebody asked, what do you think your legacy is for American art? And his response on Thomas Hart Benton Day was, read my book. It's all in there.
Patty from Overland Park. Patty, you're on Up to Date. And you're a relative of Thomas Hart Benton, I believe.
Yes, I am. My grandfather was Thomas Marion Benton, and they were both related then to Senator Benton.
Oh, wonderful.
Wow.
My comment, well, my grandfather and he looked very much alike. The great difference being my grandfather was 6'4". But the large head, the big face, I saw a picture the first time of Thomas Hart Benton, and I went, oh, my gosh, he looks just like Granddad. But then I found out how short he was. That was
yes,
a little
he was.
There. I didn't know anything about my relationship to him until I was in my 30s and I was working at Kansas City Life Insurance, and they always had Thomas Hart Benton things there. There was, you know, a lot of that because it was in Missouri. When you said earlier, Mr. Wolf, about the people during the Depression era thinking that what he did was not important, I so completely disagree. In the way of movies, we had movies that were fun and cute and took people's minds off of the Depression. And I think his work did the same thing. I think it brought to us what the basis of our being Americans was, whether it was baling hay or whether it was building a railroad or whatever it was.
Right.
Norman Rockwell was never considered much except an illustrator. And now we love him. We adore him. I think the same is true of Thomas Hart Benton.
Patty, thank you for the good call.
I would agree, and I didn't mean to imply otherwise. I think that that's exactly the value of Benton's painting, and I think the caller really articulated it quite nicely, is that at this critical moment in American history where naturally there was a huge loss of confidence and a great deal of angst and anxiety, you know, Benton's paintings reoriented the public to they're sometimes mythical, but of course also sometimes very genuine sense of their national qualities of industriousness and agrarian wholesomeness. It was the radical left, in particular the social realists and many of the Marxist art critics, who believed otherwise, that this was a false image of America, that it was really too optimistic and rosy a picture in the face of such a massive crisis.
Hey, how did he wind up on the cover of Time magazine, Justin?
Yeah, he had a wonderful promoter, a man named Maynard Walker, who was a newspaper editor and then a gallery curator in New York City. And in fact, it was Maynard Walker who was the first person to decide to show Thomas Hart Benton, Grant Wood, and John Stuart Curry in the same exhibition. And that exhibition, in fact, was at the Kansas City Art Institute. And Time magazine, much at the urging of this man, Maynard Walker, decided that they would do a story on these new virile American painters of the U.S. scene, as they called it, what we now call today either American scene painting or regionalism. And they decided that none other than a self-portrait of Thomas Hart Benton would grace the cover of Time, and he was the very first artist to appear on the cover of a major national magazine.
And we can't end this program without talking at least briefly about his relationship with the great Jackson Pollock, which was as confusing as it is fascinating. Just briefly, what was that relationship? Because it changed so much over the years.
It did change a great deal, and I think one of the things I learned doing this research, I certainly had the image of this father-son relationship turned sour, and a sort of Oedipal rage on the part of Pollock against this paternalistic figure. And some of that is true, but I was really quite moved by how tenderly they felt about each other really throughout their lives. They remained very close despite their obvious differences in taste as artists. And Pollock would, late into his life, up until his death, in fact, would call Benton late at night in Kansas City to ask him questions about his career and to discuss personal matters. And Rita Benton, Thomas Hart Benton's wife, was also extremely close with Pollock. So, yes, they had disagreements about the direction of American art, but they were very warm with each other and really loved each other tremendously up until Pollock's tragic death in the 50s.
Justin Wolfe's new book on the life of Thomas Hart Benton is titled just that, Thomas Hart Benton, A Life. Again, you can hear him at 6:30 in the evening next Thursday, April 12th, at the Central Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Just show up or RSVP by going to kclibrary.org. Justin, thanks so much for your time today. I sure enjoyed having you.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank you for inviting me on the program.
You bet. That's Justin Wolfe.